boy.
Yeah, I just ran to check up on myself. Some days I just have to check up on myself.
What's good, y'all? This is your girl, Ashley Monet. Thank you so much for tuning into my podcast. I just want to talk. This is my first episode, so I'm really excited to have you guys here. I'm going to touch on a couple of different topics, so I want y'all to bear with me. I'm going to try to condense everything. I won't make it too lengthy. I just want to say first that here is all facts, no feelings. Anything that you hear on this podcast is definitely a fact, is verified. There is no gossip here. Just because I give my opinion about something doesn't mean that I'm still not going to give you the facts first. So I just want to say that. I want to put that out there. But I'm really excited to do this because I really love to talk, and there has been so much that has been going on, and I didn't want to miss anything. I didn't want to leave anything out. So I really honestly just want to jump right into it. So basically how I'll do it is I'm going to do the topic of the day, which I call today's topic. So that's basically going to be what I'm going to talk about throughout majority of the show. It's going to be today's topic. And then I always jump into global gossip, which is pretty much going to be just a couple of random reports of everything that's already going on right now. So it's going to be stuff that you probably have already seen. If the world is talking about it, I'm going to be talking about it. So let me just put that out there first. But I do want to say that it is extremely hard to start a podcast. This has not been an easy journey. It hasn't been an easy process. Especially when you are doing something primarily from your phone, it's really hard. So honestly, I've been working hard, and I think a girl deserves some recognition. Can I get a round of applause, please, for my hard work? Because I've been putting in. Round of applause, baby, make that clap. Drop it to the flow, make that. All right, thanks. So yes, I'm going to go ahead and jump straight into it. We're not going to waste any more time. Okay, so let's just start off. I have to talk about DMX. So as everybody knows, rapper legend DMX just passed away about a week ago. DMX used to be, if you don't know, if you're one of the young ones, DMX used to be a part of a group called the Rough Riders. Like maybe, I'll say late 90s, early 2000s. If you are kind of unaware of DMX, he's been struggling with drug addiction for a really long time. So this isn't something that's new. This isn't something that just happened. This has been happening. It's been going on for a while. So I had to look into all the facts, and I had to see exactly what was going on. But he passed away at 50 years old from what seemed to be an apparent drug overdose that left him brain dead. So it said that he passed away in White Plains, New York. So he was still in New York when he passed away, after being in a coma and on life support for 4 days. So I guess it was his family that had decided to take him off of life support on Friday, April 9th, which is when he was officially announced deceased. So the doctors had been given reports from what I had been seeing, like on Instagram and Facebook, like pretty much every day. And every update was pretty much the same. He was still unresponsive, in a vegetative state. He was still in a coma. So nothing had really changed over the course of the 4 days from the day he got there to the day that he left. So like I said, he's been battling with a drug addiction for a while. So like I said, this isn't something that's new. And I thought it was really interesting that I want to share it with y'all, because literally not long ago, there was an episode on OWN Network, which is Oprah Winfrey Network. Oh my gosh. And there is a lady called Iyanna VanZant. I don't know if you all are familiar with her, but she's a life coach. She's had her own show on OWN for a while, for a couple of years now. I'd say about 10 years she's been on OWN Network. And basically she just does like really intensive therapy with people that need it. And it is so eerie because I was watching old episodes like maybe a month ago, and DMX's episode came up with his son. And she had did like a really intense therapy session with DMX and his son, because his oldest son was, I guess, feeling some type of way just about his lifestyle and things like that. And I want y'all to listen to this clip, because I thought this was pretty interesting. Because I mean, to be honest with y'all, if I'm just keeping it real, this is not something that I think would have been prolonged or maybe happened quite some time, like after this. I could kind of see this coming from a mile away. This is something that he's been dealing with for a long time, but yeah, I want y'all to hear this. I have this clip.
Because from your mother, your son, your wife, even your friends, all of them have said this one thing to me. I'm waiting for the day I get the call that he's dead.
My son said he's waiting for the call?
Yeah. Your son is waiting for the call. Your friends are waiting for the call. Can you hear that people who love and care about you,
are afraid you're going to die?
Is that not crazy? Literally, that's crazy. When was this episode aired? 6 years ago? And I'm like, this is nuts. I'm literally, when I watch this, and then he was announced dead, I was just like, oh my God, there's literally no way. And I mean, just him being who he is, this is not, like I said, this isn't something that's new. This is something that has been going on for majority of his life. And I was just talking to my husband about this, and it just kills me how celebrities, people that are, you know, in the public figures, when they battle with drug addiction, you would think like all the people that they come in contact with, all the people that they have to deal with on a daily basis, their so-called friends and family, like, why does nobody step in immediately? Like, dude, you need help. I want to help you. Like, do you know how far we are in the future for somebody to still be like dabbling with crack cocaine? Like, it's not the 80s, it's not the 90s. And the fact that he's been doing this for so long is crazy to me, because when he passed, I seen a lot of interviews, a lot of posts like from T.I. and obviously people that were close with him. And that was one of the main things I was thinking was, where was y'all at when he was battling? I see a lot of jokes that people make about him, his voice, and hey, AOB, and let me get some water. And y'all always joke about him. And it's like, clearly this is who he is. And like I said, I was just really confused. Like, how come nobody stepped in to help him? Like, you need intermediate help. Not saying that nobody did, but you can just tell when people don't take it serious. So I definitely had to touch on that, because that subject has, like I said, it was eerie. He had announced that he passed, and then I had just seen that episode, and it was just, it was a lot. So, but moving on from that, so let's get on to a lighter note. So I thought this was really funny. So ex-Disney star Brenda Song, which if you don't know who that is, she played London Tipton on the Disney show The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, and then they did like The Suite Life on Deck. It was on TV for a while, like maybe 5-6 years. Just had a baby with Macaulay Culkin. And if you don't know who that is, Macaulay Culkin played Kevin McAllister in Home Alone 1 and 2, the iconic movies. And I don't think this is weird because they were in a relationship. I think it's weird because I didn't know. I really like to think of myself as being knowledgeable. I don't live under a rock. I think I know a lot. I try to keep like in sync with everything. So I thought it was really interesting that they had a baby out of nowhere. I don't like it when people pull like a Nick and Mariah. Don't pop up out of nowhere with this secret relationship, this secret marriage and baby. Like, where the hell was y'all at when this relationship was transpiring? Like, that was just so funny to me. But the only reason that I really think I had a hard time getting over this is because when I think of Brenda Song, I can't think of her as who she is now, which is like a grown woman, she's a mother. I always think of her as London Tipton. And if you watch The Suite Life of Zack and Cody, London was really behind. I'm not gonna say slow, but she was very interested in, like I said, when I think of her, I always think of stuff like this.
Worse! Why is the ocean so hot?
Probably because it's a hot tub.
Why is there a hot tub in the middle of the ocean?
Just a mess. Like I said, every time I think of her, I just think of her being London Tipton. I can't think of her being anybody else. I really hate when that happens, but that's typically when you know somebody play their role really good in something, when you just can't see them as nobody else. You can only see them as that role, which I think is funny. So, but yeah, they welcomed a baby boy. And then they named him Dakota Song Culkin, which I think they named him after his sister. I remember that name. I think Macaulay Culkin's sister passed. So to my knowledge, yes, they named him after the sister. So like I said, I thought that was really funny. I just want to share that with y'all. Just I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that. But okay, so listen, this is too funny. I had to talk about this. So apparently, y'all cousin Usher, Usher Raymond, was at a strip club in Vegas the other day. What's the name of the strip club? It's called Sapphire Las Vegas Gentlemen's Club. So apparently, Usher was at the strip club throwing Monopoly money with his face on it. So one of the dancers put him on blast. What's her name? B Love, which is just her Instagram name. I'm sure that's not her real name. But she had to put him on blast. This was her quote. This was from her Instagram story. She said that Usher came into the gentleman's club making it rain, throwing a lot of money. But she said she had noticed that the money that he had threw didn't look real and didn't look normal. She said the money that he was throwing was not only fake, it has no trade-in value whatsoever. So that means you couldn't trade it in for anything else, any type of value, nothing. It's about as useless as Monopoly money, literally. So she decided to go on Instagram and ask her 82,000 followers how social media should handle this. And my thing is, girl, Usher is little. I don't think I would have let him leave out of the door without paying me correctly. You gonna have to come with something because this ain't it. Strippers are hardworking women. You're not leaving, sir. Whatever fake money you just put on this floor is what you're gonna have to pay me for real. And honestly, when I read this, it was so funny because this is literally what I thought of.
If it went, why would you bring this to somebody else's club? That's sad.
Hey, why would you bring that to this club? Why would you do that, sir? Why? You don't have no money? All that flexing he be doing? You know what? Let me just say this really quick while we're on the terms of flexing, because I see this too much, especially with public figures. They like to flex a little bit too much. Do you always notice that when you're on Instagram or something like that, you see a celebrity, whether it's Offset, 2 Chainz, anybody, T.I., they always flexing something. New car, new whip, new chains, exclusive shoe collection. But then when stories like this come out, it literally makes me think, like, why y'all be capping so hard? Literally, why? Same thing with Quavo and Sweetie a couple weeks ago, which I was so upset that I was still in the process of setting this up. I didn't get to talk about it. I wanted to talk about that so bad. But when apparently he took her Bentley back, apparently Quavo had bought Sweetie a Bentley for Christmas last year. And when they broke up, supposedly he got a repo. He came out and said that he didn't, but it just made me think, like, y'all be flexing hella hard. You was making payments on that car. Y'all make it seem like y'all got so much money. I mean, I know she's just your woman, but I don't know. I just always think about stuff like that. Because to me, it just seems like the cap is just a little too big. It's a little too much. But I just thought that was pretty interesting because I just, too many celebrities be capping for me. And it just really irritates me. But besides that, so now that we're done with a little global gossip, we got to get straight into it. So listen, over the last 2 weeks have been the most emotional weeks in general, just for me as a mother, as a just anything, as a woman, as a black woman. I have been thoroughly following the Derek Chauvin trial for the murder of George Floyd. So trial started last week on Monday and it has been extremely extensive. So trial has been literally like a job shift. They come in at 9 and they leave at about 5:30. So it is about 8 hours of testimonies. So it has been very, very extensive. Typically what I do is I wake up after I clean up, make my coffee and everything like that. I have to sit down and I watch it word for word, piece by piece, minute by minute, because I don't want to miss anything. So much stuff has been happening. Okay. Now I know it's been a while since his death. So George Floyd died last year, May 26, I believe, 2020. So it's been a while. It's been almost a year since he passed. And the trial is finally here. It's actually coming to an end. This is the last week. They're doing closing testimonies and everything. So trial is coming to an end. It's about to be over. Listen, if I had 2 hours worth of time, I would tell y'all everything that has been going on. But just to sum it up, I'll just give y'all a couple key things that's been happening. Just for people that's not following it, it comes on actually HLN is the network, and they play it live just like a TV show, and they show you every single thing that happens in the courtroom. Even when they take a break, it's live. So everything that they show on there is real. So it's a little more in depth than probably what people have seen like on Instagram and on Facebook and stuff like that. But like I said, just this is some of the key stuff that has been happening since the trial started. So the prosecution, which if you are unfamiliar with legal terms, prosecution is typically who represents the victim, and then the defense is who is defending the bad person. So the prosecution, which is for the side of George Floyd, which is representing the state, there are 5 prosecutors, which is very abnormal, I guess I should say. They have a ton of prosecutors in George Floyd's, on his behalf, which I thought was a little weird because that's a lot. And then when you go over to the defense, which is the man that is Derek Chauvin's attorney, his name is Eric Nelson. It's just him by himself, which doesn't work in his favor. I don't know if anybody is familiar with how court works. If you watch Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, like me, you kind of get an idea. There's typically one prosecutor, one defense, but when you're on trial like this, it's kind of like when OJ was on trial. You know, you kind of need the dream team. You need at least 3 people to defend you, to be on your behalf, because one person is not enough. Let me tell y'all something. Eric Nelson, the man that's defending Derek Chauvin, has been getting his ass chewed up and laid out, okay? For one, he's doing it on his own. That's already bad enough. You don't have no help. So let me just give you a recap of what they've been saying, like the key testimony. So the prosecution has had 38 witnesses take the stand. Everybody has been in this courtroom testifying, from the dispatch lady that initially seen the act when it was happening, every officer, every lieutenant, forensics, cardiologist, pathologist, excessive force experts, any person that you can think of, every person that touched this case had to testify. That is the most testimonies I think I've ever seen. I don't think I was really prepared for that, but 35 witnesses have taken the stand so far since the trial started. So basically what they've been saying in the courtroom is that, now this is what the defense is saying. So this is what Derek Chauvin's lawyer has been saying in his defense. So, well, let me just say this first. They had a use of force expert come in and basically say, he analyzed the video, he looked at everything and just gave his personal expertise, his opinion, if he thinks that basically it was excessive force. So this is basically what he said. Where we're at now is Derek Chauvin used excessive force that resulted in George Floyd's death. So just a small recap, if you don't know, Derek Chauvin is one of the 3 police officers that had the encounter with George Floyd's in front of Cup Foods on May 26th, 2020, before he died and when he was arrested. Derek Chauvin, one of the cops, was the primary one. He had his knee on George Floyd's neck for a total of 9 minutes and 29 seconds. George Floyd was actually pronounced dead at approximately 6 minutes. So that means George Floyd's dead body was laid underneath that cop's knee for a full 3 minutes after he was already dead. So that means his dead body was up under this man's knee for an additional 3 minutes after he was already passed. Like, you still had... I can't even go there. It's gonna make me upset all over again. But one of the things that kind of cracked the case open on prosecution, it was a really good day for prosecution. This was last week on Thursday, I think. One of the experts, which his name was Dr. Jonathan Rich, he was a cardiologist who testified that George Floyd died from low oxygen levels and induced by positional asphyxia. Now, I'm not a doctor either, but if you don't know, positional asphyxia is a form of asphyxia which occurs when one's position prevents them from breathing correctly. So basically, because he was up under him for so long, it stifled his breathing and ultimately killed him. So I have a clip. I want to play this for y'all so y'all can hear what he said.
Cardiopulmonary arrest caused by low oxygen induced by positional asphyxia. What caused the low level of oxygen in the case of Mr. George Floyd?
Well, in his case, it was truly the prone restraint and positional restraints that led to his asphyxiation. In a nutshell, he was just simply unable, using all of his muscles of respiration, his chest wall, what we call accessory muscles of respiration, which are extra muscles that will be triggered in the event that you're having trouble breathing.
All right, I gotta stop it right there. But basically, to sum all that up, all those fancy words, all those big terms, it just means George Floyd was in the prone position, which the prone position is when you are laying flat, like if he was laying flat on your stomach or flat on your back. So you could either be on your stomach or on your back. Either way, you're prone, so you're laying flat. And he was in the prone position for too long. He laid flat, just literally, it's so sad because when you look at the clips, like I've been looking at him, he was literally crushed from the knee and the ground. The ground gives you no type of support. It's concrete. Then you got this knee up under a man that weighs about 160, 170, and ultimately, from the extensive time, it killed him. Point blank, period. Now, this is what's gonna piss y'all off, because this is what's been pissing me off. So this is the defense's argument as to why George Floyd passed away. Now, I'm just gonna give you a fair warning. This is trigger warning, because when this stuff started and they started saying all this, it really pissed me off. So the defense's argument is that George Floyd died from a drug overdose and heart failures. So the toxicologist found small doses of fentanyl and methamphetamines in George Floyd's system. So he also had like underlying heart complications because he had high blood pressure. So he, you know, had small complications with his heart, but nothing extensive to where he was about to die. But I want y'all to hear this because I have a clip. I want y'all to hear this shit that they've been saying. It's absolutely ridiculous. This is their... Just listen.
New documents filed in the George Floyd case give new information about the medical examiner's findings in Floyd's autopsy. Handwritten notes of a law enforcement interview with Dr. Andrew Baker, the Hennepin County medical examiner, say Floyd had 11 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl in his system. Quote, if he were found dead at home alone and no other apparent causes, this could be acceptable to call an OD. Deaths have been certified with levels of 3.
So I'm just going to stop it right there. So that's been the defense's argument since this trial started. So basically they're trying to say that just because that cop had his knee on his neck, he would have still been alive. The reason that he's dead is because he was on drugs, or I'm sorry, he had traces of drugs in his system. So because he had traces of drugs in his system and because he had heart issues, that was ultimately what killed him. So what has been upsetting me for the last couple of weeks is just the blatant disrespect. Disrespect for this man because he's dead. Disrespect to his family because they're in the courtroom. Disrespect to his woman because she's there. And I'm just like, the whole thing had me to a point where I felt like I couldn't even sleep at night because it was just absolutely crazy. Now, I know a defense has to come with something. And what we used to hearing is cops using the, oh, I felt scared for my life, I felt threatened, or I thought he had a gun. We used to hearing that. So to hear that, oh, well, he had drugs in his system, is literally equivalent to saying, oh, well, yeah, I choked that girl out. She already had a heart issue. She was going to die anyway. No, that doesn't matter. I don't care if that man just did a hit and he was high out of his mind. You choked that man out and you ultimately took his life. It doesn't matter. If the police killed or had a violent encounter with every person or every suspect that was high on drugs or had drugs in their system, it'd be a lot of dead people. a lot of people that have encounters with the police probably do have something in their system. That doesn't mean anything. And I don't know if y'all are familiar with fentanyl or with methamphetamine. I'm not that old. I'm a little young, but I feel like I got a little bit of knowledge. And have you ever seen somebody about to have an overdose from meth or heroin or anything? Their reaction and how they act and how they move is the complete opposite of how George Floyd was acting and moving on his last day of his life. I watched the camera footage inside of the Cup Foods where he went in and supposedly tried to use a fake $20 bill over and over. That man was not about to OD. I've seen people. I watch a lot of intervention. I see people in the middle of taking a hit and they look like they're about to OD. They start nodding off, falling over. And the reason that this was crazy to me is because they really tried to announce this as an overdose. And I'm like, an overdose, correct me if I'm wrong because I'm not a medical professional, but don't you have to be within the dose to have an overdose? It's not called the day after dose. It's not the morning after dose. It's not called a later dose. You would typically start seeing symptoms or probably fall the hell out within that dose. That's why it's called an overdose. So you mean to tell me he was speaking, perfectly aware of what he was doing, before the police even handcuffed him, he was in the car about to pull off. Does that look like the state of somebody that was about to overdose? That man, and I can firmly say this, was not going to die or lose his life on May 26th because of drugs or because of an underlying heart issue. He died because of the encounter that he had with the police, because that cop, Derek Chauvin, had his knee on his neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. George Floyd died at approximately 6 minutes. That means for the last 3 minutes, you kept your knee on his dead body. Listen, it's been a wild 2 weeks. This trial has been absolutely crazy. It has been so much stuff going on, so many testimonies. It's a lot of fishy stuff too that we'll talk about this in later episodes, but just as far as evidence and stuff like that, they had the crime scene lady that basically comes in, gets all the evidence, takes pictures of everything. This is what really, really just sent me over the edge. So when death initially happened and they, you know, repossessed his car and, you know, went through all his stuff and everything, just like any typical crime scene investigator, you take pictures of everything at the scene, anything that the person had belonging to them after they died, you take pictures of it, you bag it up, you probably put a note on it saying like, this was his shoe, he had a pack of gum. Now, what troubled me is the lady that was in charge of the entire, like, just forensic situation. So she had said that originally when she got all the evidence, she did her job, bagged everything up, took pictures of everything, she did everything. Nothing was too out of the ordinary. When I looked at the pictures, I had seen like a pack of gum in his car. I seen like a charger, a bottle of Mountain Dew. It was just normal. She gets a call in December from her superior saying, I need you to go back to that car and I need you to check again. But this time when you check, I want you to check for pills and money. Now that's a little weird to me because the type of woman that I am, if this was my job, of course I'm gonna do what my superior says because that's just how I am. But I would have kind of came at him like, I don't know if you don't trust me to do my job well enough, but anything that I reported in my initial report is what I found. You want me to go back and see if I missed something 6 months later? That's weird to me. So she said when she went back to the car where she gathered all her evidence, lo and behold, she finds chewed up, not chewed up, that's not true. That was in the police car. She finds pills, pill residue, and money, which was apparently the counterfeit money. So my thing is, because I wasn't born yesterday, honey, when you originally did your job back in May, when you did all the forensics and you looked at all the evidence, you didn't see this stuff. There was no money. There was no pills. There was nothing. Y'all don't think that's weird that she went back 6 months later and found exactly what her superior told her to look for? I need you to look for pills and money. And that's what she finds after she didn't find it the first time. That's weird to me. And this alleged counterfeit money, there wasn't even a picture of the money. Now, my thing is, whatever you find, I know how crime scenes work. You don't touch anything with your bare hands. You bag everything and you note it. This is this. I think it's a little odd that if you found counterfeit money in his car on the day that he died, where's the raw pictures of it? Where's the picture of where the money was before you picked it up, before you bagged it, before you labeled it? Where's the money? Where's the counterfeit money that started this entire thing? Where's it at? I want to see it. I've been looking for it. It's not here. It's been a mess. This entire trial has just been, like I said, it's been an emotional roller coaster, and it's been a lot. But it's coming to an end. Prosecution is about done. So they're going to be doing closing arguments this week on Friday. And then next week, I believe the jury is going to deliberate. And then, you know, we'll get a verdict on whether he's guilty or not. Of course, I'm hoping for a guilty verdict. But just knowing how things are in America, especially with our legal system, I don't know. So there's three separate counts that he could be charged with. One is second degree murder. One is unintentional manslaughter. And then the third one, I think, is like third degree murder or something like that. So if I'm just being honest with y'all, if I'm just really giving my honest opinion, what is the likeliness that he will really get convicted of second degree murder? I'm sorry, I just don't see it. I haven't seen a worthy cop conviction in a long time. I just feel like it's not going to happen. I want to be hopeful, but I'm also going to be realistic. I don't think it's going to happen. If I had to guess, I would say he's going to get convicted of involuntary manslaughter. No, that's not even right. It was unintentional manslaughter. I think he's going to get off on that. I'm sorry, I'm just being honest. I think he will, which I think carries a maximum of 10 years and a minimum of 5. They'll give that to him. And with the minimum of 5 and good behavior and him being an ex-cop, he'll get out in 3. It's just a slap in the face, and I'm like, it goes way further than just a conviction. The entire justice system just needs to be completely redone, because it's absolutely ridiculous. But like I said, everything is coming to an end, and you know I'm going to be updating y'all, of course, every single week. So every time I watch something, every time I see something that's important, y'all are going to be the first to know. But that is pretty much it. I have reported everything to y'all, everything that I can think of. And honestly, I just want to say thank y'all so much for tuning in. This is my first episode, and I just wanted to be as informal as I can with y'all. And like I said, when we come to this table, it is all facts, no feelings. So please come back, tune in with me. I'm going to have another episode here in a week. So I'll do 2 episodes a week. So I'll drop an episode every Friday and every Monday. So I'll keep y'all informed with, you know, the weekly global gossip and all that. But thank y'all so much for tuning in with me, and I'll let y'all. My man tripping cause I got another sale. He still buy me by a sale. I could get it by myself. Fuck these niggas, I could get it by myself.